going to share my screen. Okay. So let me just say the agenda. So I want to we're going to talk today a little more about the Chuvah Sarashba, his discussion of Minhag. We're going to add a few more Chuvah Sarashbas. We'll talk about Rabbi Willigan and Rabbi Reese's interpretation.
Welcome to Zoom. Enter your meeting ID followed by pound.
Nice. That was Gabe. And then
after made it and got Zoom bombed tomorrow, but not yet.
No, not yet. Not yet. And then after we discuss this, after we finish this Minhag discussion, I want to turn to the sugya of Situmta. And then I think it'll make sense for us to look a little bit into Darshin Lashon Hedyot, which you could see features very prominently in these chuvas of the Rashba. The nice thing is that all these things are in Bava Metzia, so they all fall as good Bava Metzia limudim. And they're definitely consistent with this idea of Akol Kiminhag HaMedina. And then after that, we'll pick up with Achilas Poel Mishel Baal HaBayis. So just to summarize my reading of the Chuvas HaRashba here in Vav, Reishin, and Dalid, I think he starts off by accepting the validity of the practice in Perpignan. That's why he starts off with Kol Davar Shev Mamon Kayam. He pushes further and says, even when it's not an explicit Tanai, anytime it's Kol Makom Shen Nagu Lahasnos Velasos Kazat Tanai, Afilu Nosim Sham Stam, it's as if they accepted that no Hakes Shem be Yisrael. So he's willing to say that even by default, we're gonna apply the Minhag to people who don't specify to the contrary. I think it's striking that he actually cites Darshinan Lashon Hedyot as the normative basis for doing so. I think that might be distinct from the idea of Kol Tanai Shebe Mamon Kayim. One reason for thinking that is if you look later in his other tshuvas, at one point he says the idea of Darshinan Lashon Hedyot might have the same force as a Tanai Shel Bezdin. The idea of a Tanai Bezdin, this kind of like top-down legislative decree issued by a Bezdin. So we can take a look at that. That might be different from the idea of, oh, this is implicitly the das of the parties. A good example of Tanai Bezdin is a ksuva. So even if like the parties didn't agree to a ksuva or didn't write a ksuva, it's a Tanai Bezdin that there automatically is one. And so I think it might be the case that the Rashba identifies this principle in Hamakabel of Drishas Lashon Hedyot with something like that. We'll see that tshuva in a few minutes. Of course, the problem is how do you understand the Rashba's pivot when he starts criticizing the community of Perpignan for doing this because it's the Minhag Shel Gayim? So there are two questions here. A, is he backtracking on the validity of the Minhag, that the Minhag would be non-enforceable as the Ramah seems to understand it? That seems to be the Ramah's view, that if they're doing it because the Minhag Shel Akum, it's unenforceable. That's one question. The footnote in the Rashba, in the Machon Yushalayim edition, actually denies that very strongly. He says, Nira delo amar rabbeinu mitamzeh shelo yichashev ki'ilu hisne, desof sof kivan shenagu nasa ki'ilu hisnu, ela kivan shelo nagu bezeh ela mitzad mishpatei agoyim ariu iser. So the way the footnote here reads the tshuva is that the Rashba never intends to call the Tanai into question. He's simply questioning like the permissibility of entering into such an agreement in the first place. Then the question becomes, why is the Rashba criticizing this as being usur? And I think the reason is it's because the practice was adopted solely because it's the Mishpat HaGayim. So the Rashba is not criticizing the fact that they were following a Minhag and that even that the Minhag itself is contrary to Jewish law. The way I read this is that he's criticizing taking up a certain Minhag simply because it's the non-Jewish practice. So it's like the underlying reason for taking up the Minhag, not the fact of the Minhag existing at all. So those are the few points I wanted to open with. I want to make two observations about the way Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Reese seem to understand this Chuvas HaRashba. I should just say, they're approaching this from a practical point of view. They're not interested in the normative force of minhag in halacha in general. They're, like, specifically interested in the legitimacy of, like, these choice of law clauses that they're interested in, meaning... Oh, Adam's stuck in the waiting room? I thought I let him in. Sorry. There we go. Sorry, Adam. They're interested in the so-called enforceability of these choice of law clauses, which is, if you agree in a contract that you're going to be bound by the laws of New York, is a Beis Din required to abide by that provision? So some people read the Chuvas HaRashba here as saying, well, if you say I want to abide by the laws of New York, that's a violation, right? That's not enforceable because you're taking up the non-Jewish law over the Jewish law, right? Based on that Ramah that reads the Rashba as questioning the validity of the agreement in the first place. And if you see, I don't know if anybody had a chance to read the Rabbi Bleich article that I sent out in the 11th hour. Anybody get a chance to look at that I sent out this morning? Yeah.
Rabbi Bleich was clearly, the fact that he included the Rashba in his footnote on Masha Kata Vatorah means he clearly seeing the Tanai is not Kyle, correct?
Exactly, yeah. That's one reading of this Rashba based on the Ramah. You saw he had, I don't even remember if Rabbi Bleich quoted the Rashba. He quoted the Beis Yosef, Beshem, the Rashba, and the Ramah, which takes up that Beis Yosef's reading. And so they say that, like, yeah, even if Yoni and I were to have a contract that said this should be governed by the law of New York, a Beis Din shouldn't enforce that because they think it's invalidated by this Rashba and Ramah principle. So Rabbi Reis and Rabbi Willig are interested in addressing that question. And does anybody remember what they say? Anybody have a chance to read through the Rabbi Willig article? Anybody get a chance to read the Rabbi Willig article? Zacharia, do you use Zacharia and Evan?
I looked through it. Rabbi Willig seemed to, view it that the Beis Yosef seems to have either different girsa or seem to kind of mix up the different questions and answers of the Rashba, and therefore kind of disregards the Beis Yosef and the Ramah as not binding, as in we'll just follow what the Rashba actually says. And
yeah, I thought that methodologically that's like a hugely interesting point, right? It's like you have a Rashba, it gets interpreted a certain way by the Beis Yosef and the Ramah, and then the move that he makes is to say, well, that's a misinterpretation of the Rashba, so like we could just follow the Rashba, right? That's an interesting methodological question, right?
Right.
But I thought, what do you think about, so what allows him, let me just make another point. I'm not convinced that, well, it's interesting, I'm not sure if it's the Beis Yosef's reading of the if like the Beis Yosef's abridgment makes a difference in understanding the normative conclusion of the Rashba. So Rabbi Willig definitely says that what misled the Ramah was the Beis Yosef's girsa. I'm not sure if that's true. Or even like if, as Mitnick was saying, even just on the pure, even on the girsa that we have of the Rashba, you could arrive at that conclusion of invalidating the Tanai, just even based on the text that we have, right? So I'm not sure whether Rabbi Willig's right to hang so much on the Beis Yosef's girsa, but that's fine. We don't need to get into that right now. But what's his main argument to explain like when it's permissible and when it's impermissible to take up the minhag?
It seems to make a kind of a yachid sibor chiluk, as in when individuals are making tanai within each other, they can make a tanai of whatever. They can tanai that we're going to follow every single law that exists in the New York book right now. But if an entire sibor kind of develops that they're kind of just abandoning the Torah and the Torah is not even the default anymore, that seems to be more of the problem. That's kind of, which leads it to being a pretty limited kind of desert.
Yeah, so I would say that's good. I didn't see the language of Yachid versus Tzibor, though it could be I missed it. There's a lot, like he has a key, I think he vacillates between a few different formulations. Do you see the language? I have it open in front of me. Do you see the language of Yachid versus Tzibor somewhere?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up.
See, on page Reish Ayin Aleph, he says, you're right. So I think he's, you could read that, and he says Aval. He says Ha'iser Rakishem Achakes Agayim. V'rak linho kein mipnei shehu mishpat agayim. Af shelo hisnu kein befeirush. So that part of the article makes it sound like the problem is accepting the non-Jewish law by default. Right? But an explicit t'nai would be okay. Right? This kind of assuming, to borrow Cole's formulation again, to assume that the sleeping sovereign is non-Jewish law, that's problematic. But to contract into non-Jewish law, he thinks is okay, right? Aval im ish v'isha hisnu kein ein iser, ku uche Yerushalmi shezeu haskama pratis, right? Now, pratis, I guess, could be, like, interpreted as it's a narrow t'nai, or it's a private t'nai. So I see how you could interpret that as, like, public versus private. So I think there are two distinctions going on here. There's, like, this distinction between assuming non-Jewish law by default versus contracting in. That's one distinction. And then there's a second distinction that he has here between, like, haskama pratis and, I guess, whatever contrast with haskama pratis, like haskama klalis, right? That, like...
He says that right immediately after the quote, in that same paragraph. He says, that's near from the Rashba, a dezeshai kura kushakulam nahagukim. But it's only relevant to say that we're abandoning the Torah if everyone is practicing as such.
Yeah. But notice the next sentence, and this is why I think that's a little imprecise, why his formulations are a little confusing. He says, "Vizeshayech rakish shekulam naagukain," which I think you're right, implies that it's about how widespread the following of non-Jewish law is. But then he says, "Aval im rakish shehisnu hadin kain," but if you require like an explicit t'nai, then you still need the Sifrei HaKodesh for everybody who doesn't make the t'nai. Right? So, you're right, maybe. The way I read this is that what if everybody made the t'nai? What if everybody made the t'nai? Right? Does he have an objection in that case if everybody makes the t'nai?
So I wonder if we can read that line of Haskama Pratit as like when the t'nai is made explicit, it like loses the shame chuko sagoyim and some of that, because then it's an explicit formulation of the two Jewish parties das. But if the mechanism we're using is like minhag medina or minhag sofer, whatever it is, that's a inherently non-Jewish mechanism, non-Torah mechanism that we're employing to get to an understanding of what their das is. But if I make it explicit, so if me and Evan make an agreement, so that we have a Jewish Evan's das and a Jewish Adin's das, and when there's no longer run into a problem. But if it's the assumed das of the non-Jews, then we get into the issues that the Rashba raised.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I think it's a good way to put it. I would just say that I think his formulation here leans somewhere in between the fact that you're contracting in versus it being by default and the widespreadness and prevalence of the practice. So I think definitely Zecharia and Evan are right to point to this last line. So it's like, as long as there are the firm holdouts who don't contract into secular law, it's all kosher, right? They're the matir. But to me, those would be two separate ideas, the contracting in idea versus how prevalent it is. I also thought this last line, just evokes the voice of Mitnick too much, right? It's like... Tzarech Sifrei HaKodesh L'chol Mishalo Hisne, right? It's like I know he's borrowing the Rashba's formulation, but it sounds like the meta concern is, like he thinks like it sounds like the Rashba's active concern is like how often, like we don't want the books to get dusty, right? And so as long as they're getting some use in some areas, then we're doing the right thing. And for me, I understand that line of the Rashba is more rhetorical, rather than like the substance of his point about, you know, the books just sitting on the shelves. I know Minnick didn't mean it in that sense, but unless you did, Minnick, I don't know, did you? He's not sure. All right, Yoni, you have a hand up, Yoni? Let's hear your... Yoni? Trying to figure out how to unmute himself. Yoni?
Yeah, sorry, I lost the window. yeah, I had a comment on the Ramah and Ramah's song. What's on Ramah? Like, I think that for what? Yeah, I agree. I love the English. So, I think his main point is like somewhere in the middle. Like, he's conflating like the contractual and the
public. You trying to say it a little louder, Yoni? It's a little hard to hear you.
Sorry, I think he is conflating. I think Ravulag is conflating those two things, like the Haskama Pratit with the whether or not it's like contractual. I think he sees them as like as two interrelated points. But I also had a comment on the Ramah himself. If we're going to go back to that, but I
can't. Oh yeah, let me pull up the Ramah for a second. Here we go.
Can you also pull up the Ramah that Cole quoted, the Ramah about Yishuv? But I think what's really important is comparing the two Ramahs.
Okay, I don't have that Ramah. I don't have that Ramah on the Sorshi yet, so.
So it's on. So if you look at the Ramah, it's in the Ebenezer Kufiyud Chet Sifu Tes.
Kufiyud Chet Sifu Tes.
Yeah, in Ebenezer.
Okay, give me one second. I'll pull it up. Let me.
I think it's really important to compare the two, because they both seem to be drawing actually from the exact same, from the Rashba.
Okay. So, Ebenezer Kuf Yud Ches?
Yeah, 118.19.
Okay, give me a second. Alrighty. All right, let me share my screen. All right, so it's here.
Yeah, so if you look, like in both contexts, he both talks about the same point about if you're no say, I'll not to minok. And the second context is the ketubot, he has no problem with it. He thinks that like that's how it works.
Yeah, well, see, that's a separate Chubas Arashba that we're going to look at.
Yeah, but I'm saying like, but then there's a stirrus in there, seemingly a stirrus in there himself in some ways, between the conclusion in both places. In both places, what you're doing is you're no se al dot, you're no se isha al dot and minu.
Yeah.
The exact same expression. So I think the way to read the Ramah is that what's significant for him is that it's a makom shidani midini ol dekochavim. And if you look at like, the Beit Yosef, like the way, like one of the changes you mentioned it briefly when we were talking about like introducing the Ramah, the Rashba's Tshuva, about whether or not what you're doing is just following the Goyim's Minhagim, or whether you're actually like going to their Beit Din. Definitely, the Beit Yosef thinks that the problem is the problem of cult. They're actually going to their Beit Din. And I think that it sounds like for the Ramah, it might be a similar issue.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure if the Beis Yosef reads them as going to the non-Jewish courts. Some people think
that it's pretty clear. He said they're cults.
But
he
I think
those explicit are cults.
Oh, in the Shiloh.
In the Shiloh, it's very clear that's what's happening.
Right.
And I mean, right. And the sugya and Simon Chavav, that's the Simon for a cult.
Ah. So you're saying basically it would be as if the Girsa here read Bidayane Gayim or something. Shadani Bidayane Gayim or something.
Maybe. I think that might be at least one solution for the Ramah.
Maybe. I agree with the suggestion that the Ramah prefaces it all as, you know, if like the background culture is done in Bidine of Degochavim, then it's problematic, which I think is stronger than like the first half of the Rashba, right?
Yeah.
I think that's fair. Let's take Evan's hand. Evan has a hand.
Yeah, so just two points here. The Rashba's Mipne line and the line right here of Mekom Shenodin, just like kind of, I mean, you don't need to scroll up. I think like we've all seen this one a lot.
Yeah.
It's a weird kind of saying a similar thing, right? So I guess the question is, so like, what is usur about having a not good minhag? So is that, so as we were saying before, is that like a communal but you bought into the bad thing? Or is there just like a jurisdiction problem where like, okay, so we just can't judge, so the Ramaz lo yachol, like, okay, it might not be bad, but we just can't judge this because we don't right. have jurisdiction.
Right. Sorry, go on.
Or what I think the line that Yoni just pulled up, which is, I think, a more like fundamental issue with having this minhag. Right? But makom shenadin b'dine is like, well, it's like this thing is bad. Like, you took something from a wrong source. And it's just interesting that there's three different. There's one iser with multiple. We've seen a lot of different formulations of the problem with it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, it's very hard to get traction on exactly what the issue here is. I think you're right that the key words here are mipnei, right? Even though we've seen this a million times, like I'm blanking on, right? It's like mipnei shehu dinei agoyim, right? I think that's what they're emphasizing, which means that like the reason for taking up the minhag is what matters in disqualifying it or in tainting it, as you're pointing out. And I think that's actually the Rabbi Reis reading, which I think is a really good reading. I think Cole texted me like in the middle of the night, as he tends to do, saying like, "Oh yeah, the Rabbi Reis, you know, the distinction is so great." Rabbi Reis's distinction is to say that the reason why the Rashba is upset here is not because they're following what is incidentally the non-Jewish law; it's the fact that they're following it because it's the non-Jewish law. That's the problem. And I think that's like a really interesting distinction. He gives like an interesting nafkamina. He says, if you accept the non-Jewish law because you think it's just like fair or that it makes sense or that it's consistent with like good business practices, he thinks that's kosher. In his mind, what's problematic is if you accept it because you think you ought to submit to the authority of the law. That's the way that Rabbi Reis draws the distinction. So you can see here... on page mem, let's see. Yeah, on page mem, he says that it's okay to have a provision accepting part of the law, so long as you're not doing it to show that you are accepting the non-Jewish law over the Torah. And he says, "Ula mashal," this is the bottom of page mem. Im omrim shemekablam es achok kemo sheyia lemachar, lamrot shelo yedu ma yia hachok bizmanahu. So if you like blindly follow the law, so like whatever the law in New York will be tomorrow, that's the law that we're going to follow. He thinks that's problematic. Aval im machlitim sherotim lino kefi achok kemo shu ata bli shinuyim, mucha milsa she'en kan lo kabbala somchut. Shel chukei ha-medina, velo bitul samchut dinei Yisrael, ela bechira b'tnayim misuyamim mitam minag ha-socher minag ha-medina. So you see, I think he's right to say, like, the distinction is whether you're accepting the law because it's the law, because you're submitting to the authority of the law. That's problematic. But if you're accepting it because that's, like, the business practice or that's, like, common sense in society, then he thinks it's kosher. And he has this cute nafkamina about whether are you going to accept the law? Like, I accept whatever Cuomo is going to sign into law for the next year or so, right? That would be problematic in his mind. And I think that captures the distinction that you see even within the Tshuva Sarashba between the Minhag HaMedina part and the Dina D'Malchus HaDina part, right? So like the second half of the Tshuva where he gets into Dina D'Malchus HaDina, that's when the guns come out blazing, right? It's like, oh, if you think that Dina D'Malchus HaDina always applies, then... like Ma Lanu, Le Sifrei HaKodesh, etc., etc. Because then there's like this real clash between the law and the Jewish law. Whereas like the Minhag HaMedina stuff, he seems to be much more cool with. That's the distinction that Rabbi Reis is getting at. I think the Rabbi Reis distinction is really different from the Rabbi Willig distinction. Rabbi Willig seems to be about the opt-in versus opt-out, how widespread is the practice. Rabbi Reis's distinction is much more narrow. It's about the underlying reason for taking up the practice and whether that expresses the wrong kind of attitude towards the halacha's authority. Those are the two views I wanted to get out. Yoni? Zolt?
I think it's an old hand.
Oh, okay. Not a learned hand?
Not right now.
Okay, it's an old hand. All right. Adin?
I don't think, maybe I missed it earlier, but I don't think I was a fan of, I don't know, Rotsvi Grenner, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, point on Rishine Bedden Rav Willig. I think it was something that we mentioned that, like, Cole and I were discussing in the WhatsApp group during February yesterday about this question of the difference between being Ocare, Adin, or just being Mosif Tnaim, whatever that, like, which could speak to, because I think Cole was very, very critical of my suggestion that here we're really being Ocare someone's, in the case of the Yerusha Fabal claim, to, like, really skirt over someone with a potential real, fully-fledged halachic claim of Yerusha is maybe slightly different than the I don't think that's the, I've only just seen that the Ramah that Zolti brought in, but it doesn't seem like it's talking specifically about to a Sebet Suba, but that could be a different distinction in terms of the, like, maybe Minhag of Mahamadina has the power to adjust things but not be Ocare things, and
yeah,
that's what the Rashba is concerned about.
So this is a good point. That's definitely the it's really, I think it's Rabzal Nehemiah Goldberg in response to Tzvi Gartner. So I think Rav Gartner, mm-hmm. I think it's missing the test. I think it's there's this exchange in, what was it in? Yeshurun, I think. It's nothing better than, like, Hamish exchanges in Yeshurun. Everyone should read through every Yeshurun. There's always good stuff in there. There's, like, an old exchange in Yeshurun between Rav Gartner, who came out against these kinds of clauses of accepting secular law, and then Rav Zalman Nehemiah Goldberg defended it, and Rav Gartner relied on this Tshuvas HaRashba. I could send out the passage. And Rav Zalman Nehemiah Goldberg came out against Rav Gartner's reading the Rashba. And he said, the Rashba is only upset here because, like, you're going against the Din Torah, like, to be Ocare Yerusha Sabal. I think you're right, Adin, to point to that as a really important point, right? So it's like, the Minog's only going to be kosher, or you could have a Minog on Medina so long as it doesn't contradict the Din Torah. For me, I think that's a little bit of a smokescreen, because, right, whether it goes against Din Torah will itself be a function of how much the Torah provides for yielding to Minhag HaMedina. So I think it's a little difficult to set up this tension between, like, what's Ocare Din Torah in this sense. Although we will see that some Rishonim do invoke that phrase, and, you know, the Yushalmi has it, but I'm not sure that's so helpful. But we could. I think it's illuminating. I think it's illuminating. There's, like, a Rav Asher Weiss who weighs in on this debate, and he tones down the Rav Zalman Nehemiah Goldberg formulation from, like, Ocare Din Torah or Keneged Din Torah to, like, things that go against, like, Torah values. So I think that's an interesting way of toning down the formulation, because I think it's more difficult to say that Minna goes against, like, the it's Ocare Din Torah, because that itself is a kind of Din Torah. But then you kind of, I think to formulate it in the weaker, more diluted way of, like, Erkei HaTorah, it's a little easier to navigate that. But I thought of
Ocare more in terms of, like, uprooting it than contradicting, because I was, like going back to our Mishnah, like, in our parak, that, like, so there's a Din Torah in terms of the hourly, like, the expected hours, but so a Minhag maybe you're not being Ocare the existence of employment hours, you're adjusting the existence of employment hours, but potentially here that you're completely negating, you're not adjusting the Baal's claim or something like that, you're ignoring it, which could be a helpful, like, distinction to make.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Is it about it being Ocare Din Torah, though? Like, just based on the actual Rosh, but it doesn't seem like we care about whether you're Ocare Din Torah or not, specifically taking on Kluka Sergai.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have anything to do with, like, the end effect of what it's doing. It's just the fact that you're...
I think that's a really good point, Daniel. So, guys, we have to re-welcome Daniel again. So good that you're here, Daniel.
Thank you.
So I think that's a really good point, Daniel. And that actually works against sort of Zalman Nehemiah's reading of the Rashba. So, like, and what Cole kept, you know, a lot of Cole's comments are about, bear in mind, this is going against Yerusha, which is Ocare Din Torah, right? All right, Willig's article also goes in that direction. It's like, the real problem here is that we're Ocare Din Torah in some way. But I think that's Ikar Chasar Minasefer, right? Like, the Rashba doesn't say that. The Rashba I think you're right to point that his language is about taking up the non-Jewish practices qua being non-Jewish practices, not what they're conflicting with on the Jewish side. So they're reading a lot into the implicit, like, non-stated part of the Rashba. And I think you're right to point out that it's like, that doesn't seem to be the Rashba's main focus. It's a really good point. See, I wonder, just to push Daniel's point a little further. So, you know, there's the whole discussion here, you Oker, Yerushas Habal. One thing you might say on the Minhag part is that, if you structure this all as a t'nai in terms of what assets are brought into the marriage, so you're not tinkering with, like, the laws of Yerusha. You're just imposing a condition on, like, how much control or how long the husband has authority over the assets brought into marriage. So it's more of like a contractual issue about the ksuva and how the assets are going to be shared, rather than like a t'nai to undo the Yerusha. The Yerusha part might just be a consequence. But we don't have to get into that. We don't have to get into that discussion right now. But really good point, Daniel. Okay, I think Yoni has a hand, but I think Evan also had a hand. So let's take Yoni and then Evan. Unless Evan was first. Evan, did you read first? Or? Okay, Mitnick, then Evan.
Yeah, no. Just a couple quick points. First of all, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious from the way that people have split all sorts of hairs here that there isn't enough in the Rashba to get you to a concrete answer about what the issue is. Right? I mean, that's basically the point. Is like the Rashba's words do not contain sufficient information to answer this question. The second issue is, like, I just think it's funny how, like, the Rashba says, like, it's like a little slippery slope, and then some people are like, well, if it's a slippery slope, the only issue is if you actually fall down the whole slope, you know, like the Sifrei HaKodesh thing. Like, clearly that's rhetorical. And
yeah, wasn't that a strange line in the Roy Willig article?
Whatever. But I think that
even though that was like Sifso Secha Dovivos Midvarov, right? Hakol Kol Yoni Vayedayim Yedere Willig.
He's missing a point, right? So, but I think that that he's missing the rhetorical slippery slope point, and just saying like, well, like you said, it won't get dusty because for that loser who forgot to put the tie in, we'll still crack them open. Like, that just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely agree. That's why these things make for the best discussions, you know. At least in the Achronim. But I mean, yeah, I agree. And you'll see, we'll look at some other formulations in the Rashba in a second and other Tshuvas. But that's why this Rashba, you know, so much ink has been spilled on it, for sure. Okay, Evan, and then Yakir.
It's kind of like, speaking about just kind of how things, there's so many surprisingly limited makoros on this thing, and this, or Siman Chavav is so short, and there's this massive, important halacha. So going back to like the original source, there's a single Midrash halacha where this is all coming from, which comes up, I think, maybe a single time in all of Shas and Gittin. And the Midrash Halacha phrases it especially, it says, afilu dinehem kedinenu, because then you're going to be, it's still usher to go in front of Dane Akum, because it's Mechaved Yerasa. Which, so therefore, the emphasis is really not on like the pragmatic consequences of, oh, you're going to be doing Din Sheker, it's going to be Zela. The emphasis is much more logical, much more. And it's said in the same breath as the drasha for you can't have dayanei hediot, you need smuchim, as in that din is a representation, we call dayanim elohim, it's all the sort of other lofty things. It's not just a pragmatic, oh, we can't end up following the Gentile law. It's much more about, like, I think the Reis Chilek is really on the money there, as in that giving kavod to their law, giving authority. So if you get the same tone in the Rav Moshe articles, and if you look at New York law as no worse than a minhag and not really binding on you unless you accept it, then it's binding on you. But if you try to comment it from Din to Chosadina, you'll get into a whole bee's nest over there.
So see, I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And as you were saying it before you got to that statement, I think I agree that that supports Rav Reis's reading, that, like, it's interesting, like, the halacha here seems to, it's about, like, what attitude are you expressing towards one system over the other? So I think, yeah, I think that's 100% correct. I agree with everything you just said. Yeah, really good. Yakir?
Yeah, this is just a small comment because we were talking about Ruvelin's formulation about the Sifrei HaKodesh. I think that maybe we can be a little bit more charitable to that formulation. That he, just, I mean, he just means it. You know, he means it as loosely as the Rashba means it. But I mean, whether you take Ruvelin in the actual contracting sense or you focus on the public versus private, his main concern seems to be that the baseline should always be halacha, and so this line about you need specific but if people who don't make the tanai is just his way of saying that you know the baseline remains halacha as long as you don't cross these lines.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point, Yakir. My response to that is, well, it's an open question. What does it mean for the baseline to remain halacha, right? So, like, why isn't there a mach about, hey, anytime there's no minhag, and I wrote this is one of my emails, anytime there's no minhag, or anytime there's no consensus about what the minhag is, the halacha reasserts its authority, right? As, like, these are the binding laws. So, you know, it seems to me like a matter of degree now, so it's like, we're really saying, oh, we need the Sifrei HaKodesh for cases where there's no tanai. And like, you know, why can't you say we need the Sifrei HaKodesh for all cases where there's machlokes about the minhag, and anywhere where there's no established minhag medina?
I think you can. I think he's not
right.
I don't think he in that, at least in that paragraph, has any justification for like why the line is drawn here. I think that's a very hard thing to pin down, why you draw the line exactly where it is. But I think it is clear like what sort of factors he wants to look at,
yeah,
in deciding about how to draw the line.
That's definitely fair. But I think then it becomes like a, you know, a game almost of, not a game, a question of how often the books have to come down for, you know, the Sifrei HaKodesh to be put to good use. Yeah, Shu is raising an interesting point in his commentary on the chat. Is there room to distinguish between like substantive law and like procedural law? See, I think I was going to mention this earlier in like one of the WhatsApp discussions. So you might think the Sifrei HaKodesh, here's like the most modest way of putting Shua's point. I take it Shua's point is that like there's always room for the Sifrei HaKodesh, right? For like the procedural issues, right? So, you know, what kind of edim are kosher and what kind of evidence is sufficient and pshara versus din, right? So like the Sifrei HaKodesh will always be in use. And you could even put that in a more modest sense of like, I'll say like the minimalist way of putting this is that the Sifrei HaKodesh are always relevant for pointing you to minhag, right? You gotta, right? So like, but I think that's just like a way of pushing this question of what's the relevant, that Yakir's bringing to the foreground, what's the relevant sense of the Sifrei HaKodesh being controlling. I think we all agree that it's okay if, you know, we're not looking up Hilchos, I don't have a good example off the top of my head, I mean, but like, if we're not using Hilchos Chachirus because no one enters into sharecropping arrangements anymore, I mean, were that to be the case, right, I think that no one would have an objection to that, right? So the question is, what's the relevant sense? So I think that's a good point, Shua. Shua, are you not talking because you have like a cold or?
I mean, I do have a cold. But I wasn't sure. I was ready to develop it further.
Okay.
Also, what are these emails we're talking about that I definitely don't get?
Oh, did you not get the emails that I sent out with, and you didn't get, did you get Zacharia and Noah's email with their outline of, like, no?
Nope.
Oh, man. I got a, okay, I'll put you back on the email list. Everyone else got the email.
I have a wild idea if that helps.
It's interesting. I was thinking of populating the Canvas site with all our stuff. It might be easier for everyone to, I just have to figure out if the alumni, Cole for sure can't get access, but even dropouts like Daniel. Daniel, did you go to YU for a year?
I did, yes.
Right, so like, I like, we'll see, like, if you know, even like, well, Adam would be in trouble here because Adam wouldn't have access.
He still works, so.
Right, so I don't want to like discriminate, but I could also just upload them into the Google Drive that I have shared right now, so that'd just be easier to do that. But I'll get you back on the email list. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's interesting just to go back to that past point a little bit, I think Evan referenced this as well. Like, there's clearly some, like, deep antipathy to bringing to being mechabed the arkos through, like, the procedural, you know, law giving and law making and like I guess jurisprudence, right? Which is why you don't want to have dayanim who are not Jewish. You don't want to end up in arkos that are not Jewish. That kind of like medrash halachos would make you think that the procedural elements are kind of the more like austere, important, like the pieces of the law that have the most gravitas. But then like the way that we've been reading it, I think the way that a lot of the conversation today has been something like the opposite of that, which is we're always going to have, for example, like you've been saying for three sessions at this point, the procedural, like the choice of law.
That was an al-khayt clapping.
Yeah. You can do a bunch of this. But the fact that, like, the fact that we're using minog is a procedural law. It's a choice of law rule. It's like eerie. But I think Yoni can tell me whether or not I'm right about that. But the substantive law, the like being ochre, the sifre, you know, being ochre the sifre Torah, that sounds to me much more like specific halachos on the books, not halachos dictating the process that we do law, but halachos dictating the substance of what the law should be.
Yeah, I agree. I think we'll have to look. You have to look case by case, like to see, like, a what's procedural and what's substantive, and when is the.
You also have to like look at the Malchus Adina and figure out when this really stresses us out and when it doesn't. And I know the reason the Rashba references it is because it's a very important question in getting to the kind of like nexus of when we feel threatened by other legal systems and when we're very happy to incorporate them because like Mishpat is the great goal.
100%. 100%.
Chalk dated through a drashian off on the Maravikovas. Why are we learning about Matil? Why are we learning Drash Saran?
That's right. You know, the Drash Saran might be related in this meta sense, but let's hold off on that for now, right? So I want to do. Yakir, do you still have a hand, or is that a lingering hand? And then Yoni Minik, is your hand lingering, or it's a new hand? Okay. Yakir, is that a
lingering? Mine's definitely lingering.
Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out how to get rid of it.
I can get rid of it for you. Oh, good, you got it. So let me say, I want to now address two things. First, I want to just bring out a little bit this tension between the pro-Minog camp and the anti-Minog camp. So you'll see the tension in Rishonim. Some Rishonim seem fully comfortable embracing Minog. Other Rishonim will be skeptical especially when the genealogy of the Minog comes from the non-Jews, or if the minhag seems to be contrary to Torah. So we'll see like a tension right now. And then I want to look a little deeper into the other formulations of the Rashba and other tshuvos, and to see what he lays out there. Those other tshuvos are pretty informative about his conception of minhag hamedina and its normative basis. So I want to do those two things in the rest of the Chabura today. So number one, I want to look at this tension between the pro-Minog camp and the anti-Minog camp. And then I want to look at the other formulations of the Rashba. And that'll clear the way for us, I think, to move into Situmta next week. So number one, as we already saw, very important machlokas between the Rivash and the Tashbates. In the case of the Rivash, which we saw, generally in Halacha, you can't say Nechasai lecha v'acharecha leploni. Once I bequeath my estate to, let's say, Dani, it follows Dani's chain of Yerusha. I can't recoup it back to myself. You had this case of the Rivash, where you had those Jews living in Majorca. You had a few reasons why you should be able to say lecha v'acharecha leploni. His main reason is that the custom in the Kehillah of Majorca, Meretzonam, so the voluntary custom of the community, was to follow the non-Jewish law. And in the non-Jewish law, they allowed for these kinds of bequests. They allowed for these kinds of bequests, and that's why the halacha should uphold it as well. So the Rivash is totally fine with this, and this seems to be a real capitulation to Minog, right? I mean, the Minog in Majorca was to follow the non-Jewish law, so the halacha should follow that. Now, Minik?
Do you think that this is about the choice of law, or it's about, like, unfairly frustrating expectations by, like, sailing to some far-off land in order to, you know, to use a different law system than they were using? Like, it seems to me more about this unfair surprise rather than about fundamentally this is the law that should apply.
So, like, you emphasize this next phrase. V'im kein eich yelech v'yisa mimkomo v'yelech eretz marchakim she'edinu lo b'dinei Yisrael. Like, what a trick. Right?
Yeah, it's like, exactly. That it's not about the fact that the law should or shouldn't apply, but it's just ridiculous for them to just be using our system, one person to be using our system as a to keep his money.
Really good point. So it's like, you know, you and I enter into a contract, you know, which says that, like, I'll deliver you these barrels of widgets, whatever, these crates of widgets when I get them into my rishus, and then I sue you in Bezin and say, oh, davar shein b'rishuso, haha. Right, it's like,
yeah, or more like if we always lived here and then I like take you to Japan and there's this random law you didn't know about, like, that seems right. They're not Jewish, they're not from, clearly, right? And so it's just this one guy being super from just to get his money back. I think that he's frustrated at the use of Jewish law as a tactic rather than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. That very much could be the case. Although you could see, for example, that didn't move the Tashbates, right? Like, the Tashbates was totally fine saying, like, you can't rely on the Minog that has its genealogy in Isser, right? So
yeah, I don't think the Tashbates, I don't think that they would disagree if they had actually met, you know?
Right. Well, you know, they're always interlocutors. They, like, competed for, like, the same position in, like, North Africa when they were, like, kicked out of Spain, so... They always write each other's necks. So, like, whenever there's, like, a Gabrivash, like, the Tashbates, like, goes after him and vice versa. So you can see here, the Tashbates really just goes out on the Rivash, and we thank Zachariah for bringing this to our Makoro sheet. And he says, Masha Kasav, ki chen nogu me'olam kal Mallorca, gam ki yia hadav arkein, ein mevin raya mi minog shel iser. Now, it's a little unclear to me what he means by Ein Mevi and Raya, right? We don't bring a proof. It sounds like what he's trying to say is that we're not going to rely on illegitimate custom, right? He's calling the legitimacy of a custom that is contrary to halacha into question. And then he gets all theological and he's like, V'tachazi mai sulkabuhu. Like, look what happened to them. And the footnote points out that there was this, like, a pogrom in Mallorca. and he's like, oh, you see, like, the Tashbates here shows, you know, he holds that the pogrom was due to they're following the laws of the non-Jews. So, yeah. But I think this debate between the Rivash and the Tashbates brings to the foreground this matter of the genealogy of the Minog, and if the Minog is, it's like, sources be'isser, or it's, like, contrary to Jewish law, does that delegitimize it? For the Rivash, it seems not. And even with Mitnick's point, that this might just be about frustrating, making sure we're not frustrating the expectation of the parties, still, the Rivash is willing to point to Minog as legitimate, at least to that extent. Right? If they were doing business in this environment, we ought to recognize that. Even if it's not a full throttle embrace of Minog, it's a pro tanto embrace of Minog to the extent that it's necessary to not frustrate the party's agreements, which I think has some normative force. And the Tashbates is willing to deny that. The Tashbates is saying, who cares that they followed this Minog? The Minog's illegitimate. Amy Vrin Rai, Mi Minog Shalisser. We shouldn't even consider it. So I think that's really important. Exchange that brings the status of Minog to the foreground. I want to call your attention to this Chazon Ish, which is also very prominent in these discussions about the limits of minhag, and especially when the minhag violates the halacha. Rabbi Bleich, I think, in the article that I sent around, relies on this chazanish also. And this is oftentimes used to say that Jews are just bound by Jewish law, and when the minhag conflicts with Jewish law, like the minhag goes, and the minhag loses, and Jewish law remains. So here's the chazanish, very famous chazanish. I think the chazanish is thinking in terms of like Israel. Like he's thinking of like we're set, like what court system is going to be set up in the state of Israel. So he says, look, even if there's no dayan who could adjudicate according to din Torah, umuchrachim lihimanos bal seichel lefi musrei adam. And so you just got to appoint a guy with like, you know, a good sense of equity. Einam rashayim lekabel aleim chukei amim o lechokek chukim. So notice the two points there. They're not allowed to accept like, you know, British law or Roman law, whatever, nor can they legislate new laws. That last part being very controversial, right? Why shouldn't they be able to legislate new laws? Shehashofet is a verb here, not a noun. Shehashofet kol din shelefanav lefi hanira elav. Zehu bichlal pshara. So if you just get like a guy with a good sense of equity, that's kosher, because that's bichlal pshara. I think this is a really important point for separate reasons, because I think whenever you talk about conflicting with the law, whether something conflicting with halacha, like pshara itself seems to be, you know, people who are allergic to pshara say like, how could you do pshara? Like the Torah tells us like what the din should be, and pshara is a right, it's a violation of din. Like, how could we? So there, I think there is a sense in which the question of pshara is closely connected with the question of choice of law that we've been discussing until now. And you see that comes to the foreground in the Chazanish. But he says if the guy is just judging equitably, that's bechlal pshara. Ve'ein nikar hadavar she'azvu makor mayim chayim lakto borosh nishbarim. I think this rings in the voice of Rabbi Rees and Zachariah and Evan. Look at that. They even got their Zoom name to be both. That's great. So this rings in the voice of Zachariah and Evan that it's about the attitude, right? It's about like expressing, he says like, ein nikar hadavar. Like what matters is like, is it recognizable that you've left like Jewish law for something else, right? So it's like, if it's done, what do they say? Sote voce? Is that the phrase? Like if it's done quietly, then it's okay, right? But if it's not done in a way that's nikar, but like it can't be nikar. Aval im yaskimu al chukim harehe mechalim es haTorah. If you agree on new laws, that's a chil haTorah. Okay, and then he says, doesn't matter whether the judge is Jewish or not Jewish, because even a Jew who's judging according to made up laws, chukim beduyim, he says that's even worse. Shehimiru es mishpate haTorah al mishpate hahevel. And here I think is the crucial line for us. Ve'im yaskimu b'nei ha'ir al zeh, ein b'haskamasan mamish. Ve'im yachufu al zeh, mishpatam gazvanusa v'oshak. So the Chazanish goes to say not just that it's wrong, it sounds like he's saying there's no legal force to the laws that are agreed upon by the b'nei ha'ir. And if you enforce them, that's gazvanusa v'oshak. And I think you just, to me, this is it sounds a little extreme. Right, like what happened to Rashayin b'nei ha'ir lamod al kitzasan? What happened to Hakol k'minhag ha'medina? So you see, the Chazanish here is he's going to great lengths to not only criticize the enactment of laws and customs that run contrary to the Torah, but also to invalidate their legal halachic force. Right?
Where did he get customs from?
What's that?
You just said to invalidate laws and customs. Where did you get customs from?
Well, I guess in line of that Ramosha, that the law would just...
I think this is the opposite of Ramosha.
You think this is just legislative?
Like, literally the way you described the difference between law and Shara, the same way he does, make the same distinction between law and Minhag.
So, Minhag's kosher laws treif?
I mean, otherwise, doesn't he have to deal with a bunch of Rishonim and Gemaras?
Okay.
Sure, are you reading that? Like, you're reading Yaskimu B'nai Ha'ir. Like, is it that
yes,
law? Like, defining different things. Like, the distinction is that law is something that has a formal haskama, whereas minhag is like this amorphous thing. It's like everyone knows what the business practices are, but they're not on the books anywhere, which
Let me just say, I agree with Adin's point, or I'm leaning towards Adin right here. I think Adin's right that we'll see some Rishonim who explicitly think that Haskamas B'nai Ha'ir is just like Haskama on which Minhagim are controlling. Haskamas B'nai Ha'ir doesn't have to be top-down legislation. It's just like some public recognition of what customs are valid.
Right. I mean, I'm sure that the word Haskama can appear in different places and mean similar things, but I think Yaskimu al Chukim probably, especially the way you contextualize it as like an Israel context, probably means a group of people coming together and deciding what their basic law should be. I mean that in a joking way, not in a real way, but and kind of like, you know, they're setting up a system for you know, under which Dayanim will practice. I think that that's like a clear distinction, and I think it probably fits well with everything we've been saying until now.
Yeah, I think that would be really good to distinguish this Chazanish as legislative, and that his point wouldn't apply then to these kinds of agreements, Minhag. I think that would be really good.
Wait, what's the difference? I'm not following. What's the difference between Minhag and legislative? Okay, like, how do you differentiate the two?
Sure.
I think minhag is something that doesn't have the force of law, right? It's practiced, it could change, and Adin said, it's not on the books, it's not like U.S. Code, you know, 1347 or whatever. It's just the way that a group of people in a specific place think about their business practices, and that could change over time.
Only in New York.
Anything that's not in Choshen Mishpat, but anything in Chodesh Mishpat is law. So, like, when you're Mocher at the Bayit, you also get the chandelier, but you don't get, like, the boat. Is that part of law? Or that
no, I think that that's Minhag as well. I mean, I think that is one of the reasons that Mocher at the Bayit is, like, kind of, like, ubiquitously understood to be inapplicable because it's reflecting. No one's saying that you can't articulate what the minhag is at any given place and time, but calling it custom as opposed to calling it law, it's not just a nominal difference. One of them's prescriptive and one of them's descriptive.
I would say it's true. I just would say that, and we're going to see this in a minute in the Shuvah Sarashpa, in the next Shuvah Sarashpa, he explicitly subsumes Haskamas B'nai Ha'ir in his understanding of Kol Kepinag Amedina and Holchen Achar Aminag B'Mamanis. So it could be, you're right that the Chazanish is using it in a narrower sense. It's like Haskama Al Chukim, right? Not like a Haskama on practices. I think that distinction can be upheld. But Yoni, do you see that?
I'm just still not following. Like, when it comes to like Yerusha, is that also Minhag, or is that Dana? Like, where do you differentiate between the two? Like, I'm just not following.
Which part? I mean, Itamar, maybe you can take this as well. But like, which part of Yerusha is confusing for you? Right, the parts of Yerusha that are in the Torah that are prescribed are Din, right? And that is a significant impediment for us to circumvent that. Now, there might be technical ways to circumvent the halacha that reflect shifting minhagim. But that's like you're hitting the nail with your head. That's exactly the distinction. The halacha will be one thing, and the minhag will be another. Not two types of halacha or two types of minhag that are exactly the same, categorically.
Yeah,
I'm just not following why like certain I think like you have to just express it. Like, why are certain things defined as minhagim? Like, why are certain things that appear in Shulchan Aruch? Like the amount of the hours that workers should have to work between like morning to evening. Why is that defined as minhag, while like certain other rules are defined as din? Like, how do we differentiate those things?
I think the way to differentiate it is like whether this is just like a social evolution practice that people do and take up versus something that's prescribed top down by like an organization that has a monopoly on the use of force and power, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, maybe
can't that be true for everything? Why can't we say that the Torah describes that the number of hours for workers has to be from morning to evening?
I think the distinction here is not on the Torah side, it's on the Haskamas Bnei Ha'ir side, right? Is it, are they could be maskim on certain practices being the communal practice, but they're not allowed to legislate top down, right, laws that are contrary to the Torah, right? That's how I understood Shua's point, right? It's not on the Torah's distinction.
I think that's correct. I think maybe at a different time, Yoni, we can talk about. I mean, I think this distinction also holds in all the other tchulos as well, right? Like, I think this is also true for the Torah. If the Ramah records something as having been the minhag in the 15th century, but now we practice it as the binding law, then that is something that has shifted from minhag to din, right? Now we look at it and it tells us what to do, whereas before, he just described what people did.
I in my forthcoming criticism of rupture and reconstruction.
Right.
Which is, it's Sof Maisa Machshava Tchila, it's not written yet, but I think that article just conflates the distinction that Shua is making between, like, what's a normative din. Like, he talks about din as if just, like, the stuff that's written in the books versus, like, mimetic stuff that evolves over time. And I think Shua is right that sometimes there's a nexus where, like, it's hard to just, like, one is just a reflection of the other. But that's a separate discussion, not for now. Yoni, can we proceed, or... I think just Shua is saying...
I just don't follow it, so I'm still not really following. I feel like it's like tautology a little bit. Like, yeah, like certain things we can prescribe as minhagim, certain things we call chukim, but like that line itself, that distinction itself, is the question we're dealing with in this sugya.
Right, so I agree. So one way to resist the Chazon Ish, Shua is saying that you could... Shua is saying we needn't be so worried about the Chazon Ish. We could reconcile the Chazon Ish with HaKol Kaminhag HaMedina, because what he's talking about is legislating laws and things like that, which is different from public recognition of certain customs. Right, Shua? Yeah. But we could talk more about that. Adam has been really patient, so we're going to take Adam's learned hand.
I don't know how learned it is, but it'll try to be as learned as it can be. I mean, I was liking Shua's point until the very end.
I think Shua's joke about... Who made the joke? Was it Shua's joke about Judge Learned Hand? He was like a very well-respected judge on the U.S. Supreme Court. Is that right? Learned Hand? No? Which court was he on? New York?
He was on the Second Circuit, no?
I think so.
All right, you got the big
key. Judge Friendly never made it to the Supreme Court.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I think the definition of minhag is... In order to read the Chazon Ish, might be a little low. It's just in terms of the sense, the imis the hu yithkimu b'nei ha'ir al zeh im haskamatam mamash. Right, so how... I understand how that could really be applicable in a sense of where you're just changing the hours, or you're changing the rights of who has the monetary right to going to work versus going back from work. I mean, fair, it just seems that from everything that we've seen is you could make a good tonight about all that, and more work, and all we really care about is your das going in. You're really saying that das doesn't make any difference. It has no value to it. It's wrong from the outset.
Well, I think that's why Shua is trying to limit the Chazon Ish to this kind of legislation rather than just certain kinds of practices.
Right, but Shua's definition is too low. The idea of minhag is something that the Torah really doesn't have any true concern about and just perhaps came about over time. I mean, the case of who has the rights to someone's earnings during a certain period of the day, like that comes up in Fairish in the Gemara and the Gemara basis if that's something that's deraisa.
Maybe Dr. Grach would indict me for being a little too imprecise. But no, I mean, I think that the only distinction I'm making between minhag and law is literally just the difference between law and custom. Law is top down prescribed, right? We have a statement on the books. We figure out how to apply it and how to follow it. And custom could have the force of law, right? For example, the Gemara that you're pointing to, right? We could say, right, the law could tell us that it's going to give custom force, but this is kind of like what we spoke about in the first two sessions, which is that the halacha that says, Hochanachar Minog, takes a dynamic custom, right,
that is not in any way normative, right? People are going to figure it out by themselves, and it gives it the force of law. That's a law that, in essence, legislates the custom. But you can also, like, separate the two, for example, in the Chazon Ish, but also in a lot of other places where you can say there's a difference between custom that people follow practically and law that tells you what to follow.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. I want to move forward a little bit, and I'm sure we'll come back to this a little later. But let me cover a little more ground, and then we'll come back to this back and forth. Zolti, I'll let you get your point in a little later. I just want to cover a little more ground. So first I want to point you to Nesivas Halacha here. That's just a way Bleich Sefer in Hebrew. I sent out the article in English from Contemporary Halachic Problems. He's explicitly opposed to these kind of like accepting non-Jewish law in some cases. I think he gives the example of accepting the law of Delaware, right, for corporations. And he criticizes that. He says it's contrary to Din Torah. His footnotes seem a little padded, like he cites the Rivash, right, as like being on his side. But then he cites like the Taj Beitz's rejection of the Rivash. Anybody notice that? Okay, but not so important for our purposes. But here in Nesivas Halacha, he says, he talks about this kind of same idea. Could you agree that Yachlitu, Ach Virach Api Mishpat Medina Plonis, Kemosha Kasa B'Sifri Adinim Shelahem? And then he says, V'hine Davar Pashut, V'ein Tzarech Lifnim, Shafilu B'dayani Yisrael, Asr Ladon Kefini Muse Harakos, Afilu Kishen Isratu Atstadim. So I'm just going to remind you of the Dr. Grach law, that whenever somebody says upashut, it means there's no raya. So here also, right, he says that it's pashut, doesn't need further elaboration, that afilu b'dayani Yisrael, it's asr ladon kfini musei harkaos, even when the parties agree. Sorry, that should have a lamed, not a mistake. Zosameres shafilim yakablu shnei atzdadim lizdayin lefnei bezen kasher, again, the Grach rule. So you can see that Rabbi Bleich is kind of the interlocutor of like a Rabbi Willig and a Rabbi Reis on this question. But we needn't get so bogged down in that. But he's opposed to their allowance of, you know, the law, even in these local, cases. I want to now look.
Do you think it's significant that maybe I'm just missing it in the Hebrew here, but in the English, he specifically says that the stipulation is void, whereas in the Hebrew, is that just an oversight? And like, because there's a separate, even if we wanted to read the Chuvas Rashba as a formal issue or not, there is still ambiguity as to whether or not it was usher to do, like, is the time in the first place.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting point.
Like, you could.
I think he means that it's clearly void, and usher lasos kain is referring to the adjudication, not to the insertion of the provision. That's my reading.
Is that inherent that if it's usher for the Beit Din to adjudicate, I guess if it's usher for the Beit Din to adjudicate according to this principle, then the principle, according to this Tanai or whatever, then the Tanai in a legal sense doesn't really exist if it can't be adjudicated by anyone. Okay.
Exactly right. It might even vitiate the Isser, right? It's mutter to put it in because it doesn't do anything, right? So, right. Sorry. One second. Sorry, I muted myself. Not sure. Do you guys hear this baby screaming in the background? No? Okay, it's fine.
But we're happy to prolong cover if that helps you.
No, that's fine. You know, it's. I don't want to say anything on the recording. I'm not going to commit myself to any views about babysitters or spouses. All right. Let's look at these other Chuvas HaRashbas very quickly. So we have the Chuvas HaRashba in Chelek Vav Siman Reish Chaf Dalet, we already saw. That was the case of the sailor who set sail to accompany the king's ambassador to, I think it was Marseille, where he was setting sail from Marseille. There was a question whether he's entitled to his compensation. The Rashba said, just going to quote the language again, Afilu lo yia hadin knosein kain, kivan shem minag mefarsha yamim kain, shama kol holech achara minag. So I think that's a really important formulation, right? Even if the halacha is not this way, still that would be the right rule because we follow the minag. We don't need a rehearse that tshuva, which you already saw. Then we have Beis Reish Samech Ches in the Shud HaRashba. This Shoel said, tell me a little bit about the force of Minog in Halacha. And the Rashba gets a little prickly and he says, I don't even know, like, are you talking about Minog in general or Minog in Dine Mominis? But I'll just tell you about it all. Right? Lo hoda tanya leiza minagata shoel, ma minaga isra veheter, al minaga dine maminis, al shneim, al kein tztarech laharchiv imcha bezeh. He doesn't seem too happy about having to be marchiv. So, next time you send the Rashba a tshuva, make sure to specify whether you're talking about minag in general or minag in dine maminis. So, he turns to dine minag, and he starts off with this very broad phrase. V'haminag b'nyanei dinei ha-mominis, kol minag shehinhigu b'neihem b'nei ha-medina, v'haskama skidoleihem hi haskama, v'dan aleha kishel Torah. So here I think, just to point, come back to Shua's earlier distinction, you already see a blurring of the line between this kind of top-down and just top-down legislation and recognition of customs, right? So like, what is a minag shehinhigu? Right, like customs that are enacted sounds like by some so by design, but I hear it's not by a legislative body backed by the coercive powers of the state. Is that the idea of Shua? Is that where you could respond? Notice also that here at least he requires haskamas gedolehem. So if it has the assent of the communal elders, then dan aleha kishel Torah. Right, it has like the full force of kishel Torah. Notice what he cites, Rashayin b'nei ha'ir lasos kupa v'tamchoi l'hatzi al kitzasan. That's strikingly like the same Gemara that the Chazon Ish was alluding to in, Rashayin b'nei ha'ir lahaskim, right? So again, it doesn't have to be, I think Shua's distinction could still stand, but I'm not sure that the Rashba here is sensitive at all to the distinction between top-down legislation and just recognition of practice. Then he says,
so why not? Why can't you read that as kol minhag shehinhigu b'neihem? So the minhagim that like just started naturally from the bottom among the populace, and then it happened to be there also was scum of gedoleihem. There has to be like some acceptance among
the elders. That's fine. So it's just like the public recognition of customs that are antecedent to it. I'm okay with that reading, yeah. So we could work with Shua, we could play ball with Shua for now.
I don't know if it matters, but I don't think that it's at all mutually exclusive to read my reading in the Chazon Ish and also believe that
the Rashba accepted it.
I think the Rashba definitely holds like me too. I think that it's a different tchum entirely, right? Like, the Chachamim could establish a minog for the community. That doesn't make it legislative, right? It's for a community. It's established, but it's not necessarily, it's not like a gzera or a takana. It's like you're still using Lashon Minog, which I think presumes that it could change. I also think that, like, the Rashba was dealing with a situation where there are two possible legislative bodies, right? Like, there's the Torah, and there's the community wherever he was talking to, the law of the land, right? Whereas the Chazon Ish there are three possibilities. There's the Torah, there's the law where anyone is, but there's also the kind of the new law, like the opportunity to create Israeli law, which is, it's a very unique situation that the Rashba probably wouldn't have conceived of.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. The Rashba goes on, and the Rashba says, im hisnu b'neihem bale umanios, kol bale oso umanos b'nyane umanosam, tina'am uminhagam tanai. So if you have an agreement that members of a certain industry generally agree on, that's binding on the industry. So, like, this is a question of, like, how do you individuate, like, jurisdictions of minog? And so he's pointing out it's fine to have, like, an industry-specific custom that's binding on the industry. If there's a Talmud Chacham there, he should give it his stamp. If there's no Talmud Chacham, so even if there's like no like Talmud Chacham to sanction their minhag, whatever their custom is, he says it's a minhag. also a very striking phrase, right? It says, like, binding on them as the Torah's laws itself. Tekivan dehisnu v'nagu bo kol bali osa omenos harehin kibinei ir achas. And again, I think, sure, you can tell me what you think, but I think the language of hisnu v'nahagu straddles the line between, like, this is like they stipulated that this would be their norms versus they just happen to have these norms. A little, I think it straddles the line between the two of them. Then he moves on and he says, Od yesh minhagim, shehu nosein, v'af al pi shelo hiskimu alav lo bezen agadol, v'lo afilu b'nei amedina b'mkoman, ela shehu minag lasos kein v'ein adam makbid alav. He says it's another species of minag where there's no, I guess, top recognition of it. There's no, like, authoritative recognition of it. But it's just like actual practices. And he gives these examples, like the Gemara says that it's gezel to take, like, the leftover material at a tailor, right? Because that's, like, someone's private property. You know, the tailor cuts off the hem of a... He cuts off the bottom of a suit pant or something. It's gezel for the tailor to keep it, unless it's a place where people are not makbid. And so the Rashba views that as a kind of a minhag. He says, you know, mochin shakoves motzi arelu shelo, etc. Uvemakom shenagu lio shelo lokhin. So in a case where, like, generally it's protected as gezel, ein lokhin min asurik mochin mipnei sheinon shelo. Same thing for a chayet, etc. So he thinks that's, you could have thought that's just about like kepeda in terms of gezel, but he reads that as a kind of minag. And he says, v'chein lomdin mi minag hamedina, af al pi shelo hiskimu alav. So you could have cases of minag even when there's no like consent or there's no agreement to abide by the minag, it's just the practices. But notice here, and he gives the example of Hakol Kamina Gamandina and Hutza Vidafna. You have to build a wall for Shutfin. The kind of wall that has to be built is determined by Minag. But notice here, he says there are some limits. So this is an important qualification on the limits to Minag. Mikamachim imnagu shalola hakbid klalo hezek re'iyash alabatim v'chatzeros minag betosu v'ena minag. Because you can't be mochel on that kepeda of the Torah. So you see, Eino Rashai Lifro Gidron Shal Yisrael V'Shalolin Linog Bitsnias V'Gorim L'Stali Shchinim L'Yisrael. So he's not totally laissez-faire. He does put up the stoppers when he thinks that a certain minog will infringe on, I guess, hard to know if this is like just like a non-Choshen Mishpat value, right? Like it's like, I guess, little Ebenezer. So he's willing to say that like minog has its limits when it comes to these things. And then he quotes Rabbeinu Tam's position, which we'll look at separately. Rabbeinu Tam has a diak in that Gemara. The Gemara says that Akol Kamina Gamedina to include even this kind of rickety fence. Rabbeinu Tam says, Umimena atalomed, Alma hutzavidafna tali biminhag, ava pachas mikan, minog bitoosu v'eno minog. V'chem perish Rabbeinu Tam, Umimena atalomed lamakam shenagu shalola hakbid klal she'eno minog. So it's interesting. He's saying, like, yeah, like, the halacha's makbid on there being fences between people's properties. It says the minog could determine how thick or how thin the fence is, but minog can't determine whether or not a fence is required altogether. Right? There's like a kepedas ha-Torah. So, interestingly here, the Rashba is imposing limits on the force of minog. Okay? And then he even says... V'karovani lomar sha'afilu mochel lo beferish lo yoil, sheyuchal lomar savra yisi lekabel v'eini yachol. So he's saying sometimes the Torah's norms will even immunize somebody. It would prevent you from explicitly waiving the provision that the Torah has. So here he's like putting the brakes on the full power of minhag. Then he shifts gears a little bit, and I'll take Yakir's and Adin's hands. He says, V'chein minag hatagarim shenogin kein tamid, afal pi shelo hiskimu bekach velo hisnu kach, lo heim velo b'nei ha'ir, el shenogin lasos kein tamid, min hastam al mi shenose venosein stam al adavar hanoheg hu osa. Uche'ilu hisnu b'neihem b'feirush, o she'tiknu lahem bezdin. I think this is an extraordinarily important formulation for taking a stance on the normative basis of minhag. He says, even if there's no public, I guess, assertion or public recording of the minhag, if this is just a practice, we'll assume that somebody who acts stam is acting on the basis of the minhag. It's as if they made a tanai beferish or tiknu lahem bezdin. Notice he entertains two different normative bases for the minhag being binding by default. Either it's like a pub, either it's like an explicit tanai, or it's like a takanas bezdin, which I think is really striking. I wanted to take Yakir's hand and then Adin's hand. Can we take your hands? And let me just mention that he cites Situmta as an example of this. Vizuhi Shamru Bishili Parakezu Neshech Mishmei Durav Haisi Tumta Kanya. So I think that's also important that he views Situmta as being this kind of just subsumed under her minog hamedina bistam. Anybody who acts bistam is acting in accordance with the accepted practice, which he himself is oscillating between it being a kind of tanai or tiknu lahem bezdin, or maybe he thinks it's disjunctive, that sometimes it's grounded in tanai and sometimes it's grounded in bezdin. Let's see, Akir, did you have a comment you were going to make?
Clarify, and I hadn't read the support somewhere, so maybe this is obvious, but maybe just clarify, he puts a lot of different categories here, you know, when there is a Talmud Chacham there, when there's not a Talmud Chacham there, etc., but it wasn't clear to me, like, what the nafkaminas are for him between these different categories.
My sense is that he doesn't see any important nafkamina between them. It's just like he's working off like the sugyas in Bava Basra that say, like, oh, if there's a Talmud Chacham in town, like, he should rubber stamp the minhag. Things like, you know, hey chashish gadol be'ir. So I don't think he thinks that there's like a qualitative difference between these different genres of minhag. He's just saying that there are certain rules for when we'll legitimize minhagim. That's my sense. Adin, you had a...
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Good to see, is that Uriel? Is that Uri? Want to hold him up so we can see Uri? Everybody say hi to Uri. Nice. Hey, Uri. Got big since the last time we saw him, right? I think he looks like you, Yakir.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. Guys, what do you think? Now he looks a little bit like Yakir. Mamash Baruch Kara Davua.
You're the first person to say that. Everybody else says he looks like my wife.
Maybe it's only through Zoom that he looks like you.
I mean, I've never seen your wife, so like... He looks like you to me.
There you go. We got Adam on our side. All right, Adin, you had a point?
Yeah, I think this dovetails really well with Ravzaman Nachami that we saw earlier with this distinction between whether it's Rabbeinu Tam's specific formulation or his specific formulation of, like you said, like Eben Isaiah versus Yordaya, that like there's a that the limits of minhag could be adjusting claims or adjusting responsibilities, but not removing them entirely. That might be a thread that I'll try to keep in mind as we like progress through the parak and see if that actually holds water. But it seems to work really well with this Rashba.
Yeah, where he's willing to put the brakes on minhag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good point. So I want to make just a few more observations here in this really long tshuva. He says, V'kaimalon minhaga milsa. So we hold that, you know, minhag is authoritative. Okay. He says, it's ke'ilu. He says, V'chein ata dan b'chol makom b'mashe noagu b'mamanis b'chol makom. And he says it's ke'ilu hu t'nai gamor muskam b'nehem ba'afilu lo hiskima b'feresh b'nei ha'medina ela shenagu kein stama hu minag chazak ke'ilu hisnu bo b'feresh. So you don't need any explicit t'nai, it's all as if they agree to it minastam. Afilu lo kasvu, harehu min astam kilu kasvu. Now this is a really important point. He says, if there's a custom in town to do something, even if you don't contract into it, we view it ki'ilu hu tanai bezdin. So we view it as if it's a tanai bezdin that you're locked into that. Kivan shenagu lasos kein tadir. Va'afilu hu kineged ha'halacha. Shahaminag mivatel halacha. Vidunin bo kiderech shadunin b'tanai bezdin. So here's very strong language. He's saying in the same way that Bezdin can make certain tnayim to override, I guess, what the halacha would otherwise prescribe, a default minag could also have the same normative force. Okay? And he cites again the sugyas and hamikabel of Darshin and Lashon Hedyo. Now look at his examples. I think these examples are really illustrative. He says... So one of those cases there is the case of the woman who had kedushin. So the Gemara talks about Darshin and Lashon Hedyo. The Anshe Alexandria were mekadshin ubishas knisasan lechupa boyin acherin v'chot finosan. So it sounds like they would have kedushin, and then somebody would grab the spouse right before nisuin. So lechora that should create mamzerim, right? Because there's already kedushin, and the Yisra'eshes Ish goes into effect then. Bikshu chachamim laosos b'nei mamzerim. Amalam hilal hazaken hevi'li k'suvos imoseichem. So what happened here is that Hillel said, give me the k'suvos of like the most, of like people in this town, what they usually write when they get married. So it sounds like the custom in this town was to usually write, l'shech ketichnasi l'chupa havali l'intu. So he said, oh, it says that you'll become my wife when you're nichnas l'chuppah. That implies that a tanai in the kedushin is that you're nichnas l'chuppah. If there's no chuppah, then there's no kedushin. Right? That's the drasha that Hillel made. What's striking here is that these people's mothers, ksuva, didn't say that. It was just the general minug in the town to write that in the ksuva. So the Rashba says, pirish, lo ksuvas imosein shel elu heviuli, el lo ksuvas b'nei ha-medina. He didn't require that this clause exist in the specific suvos of the people in question. He was saying, what's the general custom in town? Oh, in town they generally write L'chshetinasi l'chupa U'chshira kein hichshiras elu V'afal pi shelo kitshim harishonim stam V'elu kitshim stam. Even though in all those other cases the ksuva actually provided for the kedushin to be conditioned on the nisuin, and these guys... Kedushin wasn't conditioned on the Nisuin, but the Hillel was willing to say, according to the Rashba, Shamekadesh Stam Be'oso Mokom, Al Smacha Minog, Shenog in the Kadesh, B'tanai Zekidesh. We just assume that, you know, you follow the general practice. The general practice in town was generally to write that the Kedushin is conditioned on the Nisuin, so we'll assume that's what you intended here also. That's his idea of Darshin and Lashon Hedyo. So he keeps coming back to this idea of like a Tanai Bezdin governing the rules, even when it's not explicitly what the Torah requires. Let me make one last point in this tshuva, and we'll close with this. I think his analysis of im over v'lo avid ashalim b'meitav is also illuminating. So that's clearly generally understood to be an asmachta. He says min hadin lo hayamoil. So that's a case where I say if I don't work your field and I leave it fallow, I'll pay you a certain price. Right? Normally the landlord's supposed to be paid from the yield of the crop, but here there's a provision that says. But here I say like. If I fail to produce a crop, I'll pay you out in cash whatever, you know, I was expected to make through my labor. So that doesn't work. Minadin lo hayamoil. Va'afilu hisnu b'neihem b'feirush. Even if we made this tanai explicitly, it would be invalid. L'fisha asmachta hizu. Right? And so it's invalid. But then... The Rashba says, even though an explicit tanai wouldn't be sufficient to validate this, he thinks even in a case where you didn't write it in at all, Afilohachi mikivan shehurgulu hakol lios kosven venosnen kain, ein bazemishum guzma. It's not considered exaggerated language once it becomes the minhag. And therefore, even somebody who doesn't write this is going to be bound by that provision. Okay? But if this was just a private tanai, it would be invalidated because lo baze nohagu. There's no communal custom to back up this kind of an agreement. So I think in this last phrase, the last two points that you get from this section of the Rashba is A, the way he sees it as a kind of a tanai bezdin. I agree. Lashon Hedyot for sure. So he's reading this tanai, Lashon Hedyot Sugya, as tanai bezdin. And that it gets you further than you would get just through tanayim. He agrees that through a tanai, im overvlo avid ashalim b'metva would be invalidated, but through minag it can be created with normative force. So that's the last 2 points I wanted to make in this Tshuva Sarashba. Next time I'll talk about just one more Tshuva Sarashba, a short one, and we'll from there we'll go into Situmta. Anybody have lingering thoughts, last thoughts on this discussion before we close for the day?
I think for next time, I was thinking the whole time as you're going through these cases of which seem in his lesson to be falling under the heading of Kineged HaTorah, and I was trying to figure out how, it did not sit well with my initial understanding of Kineged HaTorah. I'm like, why is this thing of Ksuba Kineged, what's Kineged HaTorah about it? And that might be, how is the Rashba defining that term when is something Kineged HaTorah and when is something not Kineged HaTorah?
Yeah, I agree. In the Ksuba case, it's not obvious that that rule is Kineged HaTorah, right? That's a good point. Shua, I disagree with your comment here in the chat. You think he's saying what he means in this case of Tanai Bezdin is as an analogy?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think it's descriptive. I don't know why we would need to just call it tonight. Why would we have to fit it into the category of tonight? That's good.
I agree. I agree that he's talking in terms of an analogy, but he's saying this has the force of something like a Befer Shetanai or Tanai Bezdin.
Yeah. That's at the beginning, and a little bit further up, you read it as
this is Mikoach Tanai Bezdin.
Yeah, or Mikoach Takanas Chazal or whatever it is. And my point is, I think it's clearly just, especially the way he develops it further, it sounds like its own very robust category that he's just citing to other situations where we see this sort of power.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that point. I would say what I meant is that there's no need to force Minog into Tanai, because he's comfortable drawing an analogy both to Tanai and to Koach Tanai Bezdin, right? Which would show that he's comfortable with it not being this is the implied das of the party and it's as if they agreed to it, right?
Yes, I'm not sure if you can draw that. I'm not confident that you're wrong. I don't think that's what he's doing. I think he's just kind of illustrating the power, the force of the normativity, and not necessarily describing where it gets that power from. I think that's a valid question we should discuss along with what counts as a minotalis, minotalis, or minotalis, because that's probably relevant.
But I agree that it sounds like he's giving Darshin and Lashon Hedyot some sui generis. He treats it as a sui generis halachic principle, right?
Right. I mean, yeah. Probably reflective of a norm. I think that's right. I think I have some thoughts. We don't necessarily have to deal with it right now about what the role of the minhag is in those places, what purpose it for it, what its purpose is, and I think that might matter for its force. But yeah, I agree with you. It's Korashba.
Yeah. Great. Minik, did you want to say something, or?
I guess the only nafkamina would be, could somebody opt out of it, right?
So the Rashba is saying you don't have to opt in, just like Takanas Bezdin, if you specifically, if you don't talk about it, it's there. So to hear, even if you don't talk about it, it's there, right? But the question then is next level, if you don't, if you, can you opt out? Or is it like a Takanas Bezdin as opposed to just purely Tanai Bezdin that doesn't need any indication that you've opted in?
Right, it's interesting. Like by Ksuva, it's interesting. How does it work by Ksuva that we say Tanai Bezdin? Is it just that it's automatic or that like no matter what you say?
Well, isn't that the Masnam Ashkazar point? I'm not sure exactly. I don't remember.
Right. Yeah. Well, there it's a little difficult because like Kala Poches, Libesula, right? It's Kilo Bilaso Bilasno. So there it's a little difficult.
That's a mayor, right? What are the Chacham say?
Right, right. Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah, I think.
But I think another Nafkamina is the fact that he agrees that him over below Avid will be taken for it could be legitimized through Minhag but not through Tanai. I think that's
the whole reason is because Asmachta is the reason Asmachta is wrong is nothing inherent, it's just you don't actually buy it and believe it. But if everybody believes it, there's no reason why you shouldn't believe it either.
Right.
It's not like, for example, this is a good question. It's not called, right? Is there some inherent meaning to it, or is it just like in a, like an umdana and das that you didn't mean? So when you talk about di and asmachta, what you're saying is it's guzma. But if everybody believes it and everybody does it, obviously it's no longer guzma anymore, and therefore that's why it's not a problem. But I don't think that it means that like it's totally blessed through any laws of time.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. You know, we want to resist, like, the school of thought that's like, all of Choshen Mishpat is just Das and Smichas, and, right? And it's like, that's, like, kind of like there's one school of thought that says, like, that's why Minhag's so central, because, like, the whole system is just, like, right, like, about Gemira's Das. So I don't...
Yeah, you can erase all the Sefer HaKodesh and just have one Sefer HaKodesh of the Chazanish, Choshen Mishpat, Smichas, but
no, we still need the Svarim for the people who don't hold this way.
Yeah, the losers who missed out.
Yeah, Kiri, you have closing thoughts, or?
Wait, there's a funny...